Hi, my name is David James, and I'm the president of the Louisville Metro Council, and I am here. My address is 601 West Jefferson, Louisville, Kentucky. That's City Hall, and I'm glad to be here to talk to you.
Give me your date of birth, David, if you would.
November the 22nd, 1961.
Wow, 2 years before JFK was assassinated.
Exactly.
What a day to have a birthday. You don't remember where you were when he was assassinated, since you were only two, right?
I was at home.
Yes. Well, David, I'm going to explain a little bit about the project just to have that on the recording, and that this is a project entitled Life During the Pandemic in Kentucky. It is an oral history of Kentuckians, of course, all over the state, to give a prolonged snapshot of who they were before they found out about the gravity of COVID and how their lives have changed since then. Okay. It will be archived at the University of Louisville, possibly at the Kentucky Oral History Commission. I'll be sending you a release next week for U of L. If it goes to Frankfurt, I'll send you another release, okay?
Okay.
All right, let's start with the first question. David, can you describe who you were and what your life was like prior to your realization of the gravity of the COVID virus?
So in my mind, you know, at the time of the reality of COVID-19 and how it was going to affect our city.
Let's start before you knew that.
Okay, so before that, I would say we were entering into a new legislative year, thinking about ways to deal with the budget and to do better with our budget, and to have a more conscious soul with the city budget here in Metro Louisville.
That was a pretty full plate, wasn't it?
It was a pretty full plate because we had also were dealing with some of the issues related to the pension crisis that the state of Kentucky was in, and how that was also affecting the budget. So we had started those conversations, and that was what I was totally focused on at the beginning of this year. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden I got derailed.
Yes. So go ahead. As soon as you found out about the seriousness of the pandemic, how did your life immediately change personally and professionally then and up till now?
So I was always one of those guys that paid attention to pandemics and viruses for most of my life. Yeah. I used to be a FEMA instructor to teach incident command. So,
oh, wow.
I was used to that conversation. Mm-hmm. So when Ebola, bird flu, all that kind of stuff, I would pay attention to that. So I'd been paying attention to what was going on in China and places like that related to COVID-19.
So you got worried early then, didn't you?
Yeah. So I got worried early, and my wife and I had spoken about it, and as a matter of fact, we had started, I won't call it hoarding, but realizing there could be supply chain interruptions as things happen. So I told her, I said, we need 2 weeks worth of stuff just in case things happen. And so we had started that process, and we're actually about 75% through that process when the week of March the 13th came.
Yes.
Which was the date that Breonna Taylor was killed here.
Yes.
And also the same week that they announced that the NCAA finals or championship basketball was going to be canceled due to COVID-19.
That's when everybody got smacked.
Yeah, that's when everybody got smacked. That's when I said to everybody I know, if you don't pay attention to anything else, pay attention to they just canceled basketball.
Yes.
And so if you don't realize it's serious after that, then you're never going to realize it's serious.
Yes.
At that same time, I can remember there was a national sorority here in Louisville that I was supposed to come deliver greetings to. I think it was that Thursday night or Friday night. And they were going to be at the Gault House, 5,000 people from all over the country. And I had some serious conversations with some folks about I don't think I'm going to go to that. Something tells me that's a bad idea for me, because if anything bad can happen, I'm going to find it. Yes. So one of our council members, Paula McCraney, was a part of that sorority. And I remember having a conversation with her in the chambers of the council saying, hey, Paula, I think that this is a bad idea. And I think you should not go there either. And she goes, well, I'm going to go there and talk to them about this. This is concerning to me too.
Yeah.
So she went there and talked to them about it. They did cancel the event. And then that following week, she called me and told me that she was in the hospital.
Oh, my word.
And when I was talking to her, she was having extreme difficulties breathing in. And it was a very struggled conversation. I literally cried on the phone talking to her. I thought she was going to die.
Yeah.
And so her husband was also in the hospital with it. And so that was like a wake-up call for everybody on Metro Council.
Yes. You know,
this is no joke. And I was explaining to other council members my conversations with Councilwoman McCraney and how she intentionally had to take a breath. It wasn't automatic like we're doing right now.
Yes.
And that is no way to exist. And so there were several things that happened with her in the hospital. This was back when the hospitals were having trouble getting PPE for their doctors and nurses. She literally called me one night around midnight crying because things weren't looking good at that point. And so part of the problem is that her doctors and nurses couldn't give her breathing treatments because when you use the breathing treatment, you aerosol the virus into the air, and they had no protection to be able to give her the treatment without them breathing the same air.
Almost. Oh.
And so, you know, I made a bunch of phone calls at midnight. We were able to get that rectified. And so, having going through that with her and the hospitals and everybody related to PPE, it gave me a firsthand account of how serious our problems were as it related to our doctors and our nurses and the emergency medical gear that they needed and that the shortage was occurring. I can remember talking to the people within Metro government as we were trying to purchase it for hospitals and others that needed it, you know, our ambulance drivers and our firemen and our police officers and all that, that when we first started the conversation about PPE, the conversation was like 92 cents a mask. But because of the lack of a coordinated national effort to make those purchases, you know, we were getting quotes of $7.50 per mask now.
Oh my stars.
So
beating against each other.
Yeah, bidding against other counties, other cities in the same state. And it was just a nightmare. And I was just literally holding my head in my hands thinking, how are we going to get through this? And how much is it going to cost? Yeah. Not that I'm putting a value on human life. But I was just, how are we going to pay for it when we're already having a budget crunch due to the pension crisis and we're trying to save people's lives? And I literally know that this equipment is necessary to save citizens' lives.
Yes.
And our doctors and nurses. And so we had all kinds of conversations and meetings. And it's when I was learning to do Zoom and WebEx.
As we were all.
Yes. And so, you know, I remember talking to people and I remember speaking with people and them being disappointed that I was not going to make a public appearance at their event. And them trying to talk me into it. And I remember having to be very factual with people. Like, not only am I not coming to your event, but you really need to cancel that event.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people can die from this and it's serious. And there was a great deal of confusion that was being talked about from the national level, from the level of the president of the United States at that
point.
As in Fox News and President Trump. And so I was trying to argue with people about their logic of believing the president of the United States and what they were seeing on Fox News compared to what the scientists were saying and the doctors were saying. And so in my district here, district number six, Creighton. There you go. We have Creighton Oak Towers, and we had 29 people die from COVID-19 in that tower alone.
And that is a good nursing home.
It is. It's an outstanding nursing home. And then a friend of mine that was in another senior high rise in Old Louisville passed away. And it was during the first week, that week of March the 13th. And I had a conversation with him, and he told me that he was sick, and I was telling him he needed to go to the doctor, and he was having a hard time breathing. But he didn't make it. And so, you know, so now I've had Paula, I've had my friend that passed. And so, you know, it was just all around me.
Yeah.
And so, I felt like I had a mission in life to talk to people, to do everything I could do to try and knock down barriers, to help get PPE for people. You know, I spoke with Senator Stivers, president of the state Senate.
Yes.
I spoke with Mitch McConnell. You know, I was on a mission.
It's good that you had the platform that you do to do that, David.
Yes, correct. And so I was able to use the platform that I have to push people and to try to push them past the politics of it into the reality of it. Some of that was successful. Some of that wasn't.
Yeah.
And so
it's kind of get like you're working against American individualism.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Which we think of as a good thing most of the time.
Right. But not right now.
Yes.
So, you know, that was in the very beginnings of it. And, you know, that's when we started having weekly calls, or weekly, maybe twice a week, group phone calls with the mayor, just to try and keep everybody up to date with what was going on, so that we could make sure that we're giving out accurate information to our constituents, and the same information to our constituents.
Yeah.
And so, and that's when the numbers were churning upward.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking to myself, during that whole time, you know, like, if you'd have told me last year that this is what we would be doing, I'd have been like, nah.
I don't know about you, but at first, I think there was this sort of urban versus rural thing going in the state. The state saying, oh, it's just those big cities. We're safe out here.
Exactly. That was part of the conversation I had with President Stivers. Because he invited me to come out to be on his farm. He says, we don't have that problem here. But now it's a different story.
Yes.
And so I can remember some pretty intense conversations I had, especially around the issue of religion. And the, you know, the churches being closed. I remember calling my pastor specifically to tell him, you know, listen, this is not going to be a good situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not telling you how to run your church at all, but, you know, it just not going to be good.
Yeah.
And that I personally am not going to be coming to church because of that. And so I remember talking to several pastors about that. I remember talking to leaders of different pastoral associations.
Yeah.
And then there was a lot of feelings amongst different pastors.
Yeah.
Some thinking the government had interceded where it shouldn't be. Others were being very compliant and trying to help make sure people stay safe. Others had populations in their churches that were extremely elderly,
mm-hmm.
and they were very concerned about hurting them.
Yeah.
And the whole mix of those conversations went on, and you know, they have not gone on. I've not had those conversations lately. I think everybody has come to grips.
Yes.
To where we are. Even though I still have conversations with people that are listening to Fox News and the president of our country saying things that aren't true.
Excuse me, David, I lost your video. There you are back.
There you are. So we're doing this on my phone, so when people call in and
sorry.
That's okay. So, you know, I would say that I still have those conversations with groups of people. For example, yeah. There was something the president said about, well, only 6% of the people died because of COVID, and they had other things, and as if that was some big news.
What a misrepresentation, though.
Beginning.
Yeah.
You have you know, underlying ailments, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And so I've been telling people, like, that's not some big secret. I don't know why the argument is, why we're such resentment to trying to save people's lives.
Yes.
And not only lives, but all the thing. The other thing I tell people about COVID-19, it's really not, I mean, it's important that people die and live, but it's not like you go totally unscathed.
Yes.
Right?
All these after effects are just beginning to emerge.
Exactly. They have all sorts of after effects. And my favorite line that I tell people now is when they invite me to different things or want me to come over to have a barbecue, I'm like, I don't look good on a ventilator. I'm just saying. So
I'm going to remember that. I may steal that from you.
Yeah. So, you know, like my wife and I have been, you know, long time season subscribers to UofL football tickets. Right.
Yeah.
And this year I was like, we're not doing it. I don't want to, we're not going to do that. It's just like, that's just going to turn to a big Petri dish.
Yes.
And so, same thing for Kentucky Derby. We go every year to the Derby and, you know, we ask for a refund, early on because I just wasn't going to go to the Petri dish.
Can I ask you something? Let's talk a little bit about how the various levels of government have handled this. You've talked a little bit about the local level. Do you sort of feel pretty confident about Metro?
Yeah. Dr. Sarah Moyer is our public health professional director. And she is, I often brag that she's the best in the country, but she is amazing. And her conversations with me, with others, have been very straightforward, very matter of fact. And if she doesn't know something, she doesn't make it up. She tells you, I don't know, but I'll find out.
Yeah.
And, but she is on top of it. Mm-hmm. And she tries desperately not to play in any politics whatsoever. She is facts only.
Yeah.
And if you try to have a political conversation with her, she will not engage.
Yeah. I feel pretty good about Marty Polio. What about you, the schools?
I do too. Marty Polio, I've had conversations with him about all of this since this has been going on also. And Abby Piper from the school system, you know, we have, and Brent McKim.
Yeah.
And so we have all talked, and I feel very confident in the way that Dr. Polio is handling these things.
Yeah.
And he would tell you, just as I would tell you, the decisions that we make when we're dealing with all these things is not because it's the right thing to do. You're making decisions of bad decisions. You know, you've got a list of bad decisions to make. None of them are great decisions. None of them are like truly the quote right thing to do, but they are the best thing to do, I guess is the best way to say that.
Exactly.
Out of some bad decisions. Is
what
it
about
good
the state level, David?
State level, I had conversations with the governor and his office and Dr.
Doc?
Yes, yes. And
I've been watching those shows.
Yes. So we've had conversations. I remember early on, there was conversations with Dr. Stack about, and the governor, as it related to different levels of quote, lockdowns or staying healthy at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very complimentary to the governor because, you know, he's like having Andy from the Andy Griffith Show come talk to you.
That is right on.
And he will talk to you. He's not going to say we're closing restaurants today. What he'll say is, now later in this week, if these numbers continue on, we're going to have to talk about the restaurants and bars. Yeah. And so that in your mind, you have some idea, you're not going to be in shock when he says it, right?
Right.
And he has a way of putting a little sugar on it to make it feel a little bit better when it's going down.
But he's taken a lot of heat, hasn't he?
Oh, he has. And I remember I had to come to rally to help for when there was discussion about the chiropractic care.
Yeah.
Several constituents had come to me because they rely on chiropractic care as opposed to pharmaceuticals for chronic back ailments they had. And so
it's hard to crack your back virtually.
Exactly. And so, you know, I pushed on the governor a bit on that because I said, we've got to find a way to do this. We already have a pill problem in our state. I don't even amplify that. And it's particularly in our city. And so he worked really hard to try to find a way to make that as safe as possible so that people that had been working really hard not to be on pharmaceuticals to take care of the back, either because they had a pharmaceutical problem in their history.
Of course.
And they didn't want to get back into that.
Yeah.
And he recognized that as a problem. As the attorney general, he worked really hard against substance abuse, and he recognized that was an issue. And he genuinely tried really hard to make sure to get that done. And he did that within 4 or 5 days. I mean, he worked really hard on that.
One of the things about this pandemic, everybody is sort of saying silently, I'm glad we got the governor that we got now rather than the governor we had then. Oh,
I say it regularly out loud. I don't say it silently. I'm like, thank you, Lord. because I can imagine how that conversation would have gone between me and him. I'm thankful for Governor Beshear.
Almost throughout my interviews, that's almost, whether you're a Trump or whatever, almost everything I can say positive things to say about him.
Exactly. And I know, and he knows that all the decisions he made weren't popular, but he did the right thing. He made the best decision he could out of a host of bad decisions he had to make. And that's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. And it would probably be easier to go as some governors have done in other states, Florida, and pretend like everything's okay and don't worry about it. And then, you know, you've got death tolls at the ceiling and people sick and in the hospitals. And, you know, there's no
more going on spring break and bring it back here.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I'm very proud of Governor Beshear. I'm very proud of Dr. Moyer here locally. She is a rock star. I often text her and say, you rock. Yeah. And so, you know, I know the decisions that she's made, for example, as it relates to community centers, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the violence that we see in our community is because our community centers are closed.
Yeah.
But at the same time, a lot of the kids that use our community centers in underserved neighborhoods also have parents and grandparents that are having those underlying conditions. And so if we stick all those kids in the community center and they take it back home, then we've amplified our troubles even more.
Absolutely.
So it's hard decisions, bad decisions, and you try to pick the best that you can be out of those groups of bad decisions.
All right, I want to ask you about the national level, but I also want you to address in that, do you think the pandemic has been politicized?
One more time.
I want you to go to the national level and talk about that a little bit, but I also want you to address the idea, has the pandemic been politicized?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was this morning I was reading about the CDC changing how the virus is transmitted.
The aerosol droplets, those sorts of things.
Over politics. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that, you know, if I go to a football game and start screaming and yelling that I'm aerosoling the virus, or if I'm at a choir practice.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
So the politics of this virus and the president trying to make it as if it wasn't there is in my opinion very shameful. And well below the standard of what I would consider to be a legitimate president.
Yes.
And um i I am amazed at the level that he will go to try and pretend like it's okay.
Yeah.
And don't believe your lying eyes with these 200,000 dead bodies.
Yeah.
And don't believe those lying scientists, even though Dr. Fauci, I think, is a hero.
Yes.
For standing tall and telling the truth to people.
Yes.
Speaking truth to power. Yeah. I admire him for his steadfastness in light of his boss's lack of credibility, quite frankly. I watched the Today Show this morning, and there was one of the people that had dropped out of the task force that advised President Trump, and she was talking about how he was talking about, you know, disavowing the science of it all, and she just couldn't stand it anymore. And and the fact that he would try to badmouth her reputation as a loser, quote loser, because she couldn't work there anymore, as opposed to the fact that she actually knows what she's talking about and is speaking the truth about where we all are. And because of his shenanigans in office and how we got to where we are now because of a lack of a national policy for dealing with the pandemic is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, knowing that I used to be an instructor for FEMA to teach the incident command, I know that part of FEMA's responsibility is to be that purchasing power, setting those contracts for whatever it may be, whether it's trailers for a hurricane or whatever, you know, in this case, PPE equipment, and to see that it's not taking place the way that we have trained everybody in the country to know how to do this, but we're not doing it because the president won't do it, is utterly ridiculous. I remember calling Senator McConnell's office and talking to his chief of staff about, I need Senator McConnell to have a heart-to-heart with the president. This is stupid because people are dying. And and I relayed the story about Councilwoman McCraney and how that is a real life situation. So the politics of this pandemic is real, especially at the national level. And then when I think about our governor, for example, when we have a attorney general who is in the Supreme Court arguing against the attorney general saying that, I mean, against the governor saying we all need to wear masks. Is just ludicrous. And so,
well, and they also say it's like, it's not really that we disagree with you. We have to just test whether the law is being abided by.
No, that's, I'm going to stick to regular words and not use four letter words here.
Okay. I lost your video again.
Sorry. Had another call come in.
That's okay.
So the fact that we are arguing in court in the state of Kentucky about whether people should wear masks or not so that we can save lives, and that we have a attorney general that's trying to play politics with that is unacceptable. It is not behavior that the highest law enforcement official in the state should display. If they truly are about protecting the lives of Kentuckians. You know, I often tell people that public safety is the number one job of government. It is the absolute job of government. Everything else is icing on the cake. And if you don't think this pandemic is about public safety, then you're totally wrong. And so it can literally wreck our economy. It can wreck our country, our standing in the world, our ability to be an economy, and our ability to raise our children and everything in between. And so it's about safety of its of our citizens. It's about our safety with each other. And it's nothing that we should literally be playing games with. And so,
how do you think historians 50 to 100 years from now will assess this period and how we handled it?
I think that 100 years from now, they will say, those idiots, why would they play such games with people's lives, is what I think they will say. Yeah. I think they will look back at the failure of our country to deal with the things that it's dealt with. I often tell people that as we look at this pandemic and the civil unrest that we have going on at the same time, that it's possible that Donald Trump could have danced and whizzled his way through the presidency. At the time when I was saying this, I would say, unless something bad, really bad happens, then they're going to see that his operational failures are real. And so COVID exposed that.
It was like a biblical plague almost.
Yeah, exactly. And so COVID also exposed the historical failures of our country also, as it relates to how people of color in our country have worse health outcomes, right? Yes. It's also exposed through studies that places that have worse air quality create medical conditions that are making people more susceptible to worse impacts of COVID. And even here in our city locally, you know, the average citizen doesn't know, but I know because I've been involved in the government, that our mayor is not a really good operational kind of guy. He's a businessman. He's not an operational guy.
Yes.
And so because of COVID-19 and the civil unrest, now all of a sudden everybody sees, you know, Greg's got operational problems, right?
Yeah, really.
And so it has been a eye-opening experience for many people to even understand people that often thought, well, I don't pay attention to politics or government. I don't need government. You know, a lot of people will say, well, now all of a sudden they realize why they need government.
Yes. Yes, but it kind of it goes against this sort of idea of American individualism, even the idea of American exceptionalism, when all of a sudden you see, well, what, not number 28 and dropping?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've told people that COVID-19 could be the thing that if we don't get our arms around it, that it could change America as we know it.
Yes.
And that scares me to death.
Yes. Certainly our standing in the world.
Absolutely. I agree.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the pandemic within the pandemic. First of all, I had this question after the death of George Floyd because I didn't think I could do a project like this without, if I'm talking about the pandemic, we have to talk about the racial unrest. And I guess first I'd ask you, I'm pretty sure that you agreed that, you know, the pandemic didn't cause these problems. They were already there. But is the gravity of the problem, is that connected with the stress of the pandemic, do you think?
I think it is, in many different ways. There is a quality of life issue that's associated in a way that we probably didn't think about until COVID-19, meaning that the ability to go to someone's house and sit down and have a conversation, the ability to meet over dinner or drinks, to talk through certain things.
Right. Informal channels.
We took that all for granted, right? Yeah. And now all of a sudden we can't do that, right? And so when we have the George Floyds, the Breonna Taylors, the Ahmaud Gregorys happen, sitting down and us having large public meetings as politicians to try and get people to express themselves and share feelings and thoughts, we're not able to do that.
Yeah.
And because originally when I had thought about, well, maybe I'll get the council, we'll rent out the baseball stadium, and I want to fill it up with people, and I want people to be able to express their thoughts, their feelings, to just get that out of their system and understand that we're listening.
Right.
But then because of COVID-19, can't do that. And so it has made it very, very difficult to do what I personally think we should be doing right now to try and help with the civil unrest. having large public gatherings so people can express their feelings, be right next to each other in a community. For that expression, to relieve their anxiety and their frustrations in a more positive,
connected way. You can't get connected on a screen.
In a connected way, as we as humans naturally tend to want to do, is right now impossible. And so we've been trying to do it through what we're doing right now. And let me tell you, it is difficult at best. Yeah. It's not working.
Yeah.
And so, so it's very frustrating. Yeah. And so, you know, I go out to the square occasionally and talk to people out there. And the emotion that is in the square is real. It's palatable. Yes. And when you add that to COVID-19, and the violence, I call the violence we're going through a bit of a pandemic also.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
the mayor is on every day talking about COVID-19 in his daily Facebook conversations.
Yeah.
Don't hold me to this number, but I know we're somewhere above 310. Mm-hmm. Citizens from Louisville that have died from COVID-19, and we're well above 530 citizens that have been shot or killed this year due to the violence. And rarely do you see public conversation about that.
Yes.
And that is extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
But when you add the COVID-19 to the violence that we're all experiencing, to the
economic stress of people losing their jobs,
exactly,
not knowing the rent's going to come, getting, you know, thrown out of their apartments, the job is not there anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of stress has to end.
Frustration of watching Senator McConnell play games with aid packages when I know people. You know, I drive down the street and I see people's things sit out on the street.
Same here in Old Louisville.
Yeah, I don't have the words to express my anger at the lack of the federal government led by Senator McConnell not being here at this ground level.
Yes.
To look in the faces of people. I want him to come look at the faces of the people that have been set out of their apartments because of the COVID-19, because they don't have a job to go to because their job has either vanished because of COVID-19 or has been shut down or severely reduced because of COVID-19. The amount of servers and hospitality industry workers here in Louisville, Kentucky that have found themselves in...
Lost your video again. There you are.
There we go. That have found themselves jobless.
Yeah.
And just trying to survive.
Plus, we're worried about that $600 that makes them want to sit off the couch and not work.
Yeah. That.
Insulting.
Yes, it is. And so I find myself looking at people and talking to people and listening to them cry.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It is hard. It is very hard. Anything else you want to say about the racial unrest?
No, I guess, well, I do. I would simply say, you know, there's a lot of mixed feelings in our city about the racial unrest. There's people that have no clue why people are mad.
Yeah.
There are people that are passionate about their anger and frustration. There's people in the middle. I feel like the conversations that we're having about racial unrest are needed conversations. I'm not happy with people expressing that by tearing things up or hurting anybody.
Sure. But you don't think the suburbs are going to be destroyed?
Yeah.
That's a scare tactic and a half, isn't it?
Exactly.
By the way, the fire department wouldn't let the firemen answer this question we're talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
So
it was good hearing on tape, but it was a shorter interview.
So what I tell people when I have conversations with them about this, in the end, I tell people, hey, you know, you may not agree with everything I say related to that,
yeah,
because you are not in the same wrapping that I'm in, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not in the same wrapping you're in. You can't explain to me, just like you can't explain to me, what it's like to be you.
Right.
And have me feel that totally, just like I can't do the same for you.
Yeah.
And so, but what I can say is that we're going to have conversations, whether we want to or not. And some of those conversations are going to cause us to shed tears.
Yes.
And shout a little bit and be angry. And in the end, when we get through all this, I'm going to love you more and you're going to love me more.
Yes.
And our city is going to love itself more. And hopefully our country will actually live up to the ideals that we believe it to be and that we want it to be.
That's on the top of my prayer list.
Yeah, mine too. And so I'm here for the conversations, and I'm here for the arguments, I'm here for the debates, and we will get through this.
Yes.
And we'll be better off for it in the end.
Can you, this is a switch of gears, can you say anything good that's happened to you come into your life as a result of the virus?
I would say that what's come to good to me in my life because of the virus is, my wife would tell you, is that I've really been able to attack the honey-do list.
There you go. I don't know if that's good for you or not.
But one of the things I would absolutely say is that we, for me, I have learned to appreciate my connectivity with people to a degree that I didn't appreciate before.
Yes.
I didn't realize what I had until I lost it. I didn't realize, you know, just next door neighbors. You know, I'm so used to walking across the street and,
sure,
and talking and hugging them. And, you know,
yeah,
we don't do that anymore. You know, and we intentionally are trying to keep our distance to protect each other. I have learned that I really am a person that appreciates being around other people.
Yeah.
And that it's utterly important to me.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I've learned to do is to tell people that I love them.
Yeah.
And because of COVID-19, you just assume before COVID-19 that you're going to get up tomorrow and you're going to talk to your friends.
Yeah.
And then because I've had family members that have died from this. My wife's uncle died from this just
a couple
weeks ago.
Oh my goodness, I'm sorry. My sympathies to her.
Thank you. And so, which has caused me to start calling family members and say, hey, how are you doing? I just want you to know I love you. And things like that.
Yeah. I want you to talk a little bit about what you're kind of referring to, and that is the loss of physical touch and people not able to grieve properly, people dying alone in nursing homes like Trayton Oaks. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Sure. You know,
lost your video.
There we go. Are you there? There we go.
Yes, I am.
I would say that people are, the loss of not being able to touch, shake hands. Like, I'm an elected official. You know, I love shaking people's hands, putting my hands on their shoulders, you know, and not being able to do that when you talk to somebody or have a meeting is frustrating. You know, and in the very beginning, I would keep my hands in my pockets just for me not to do it.
Yes.
Right? And still, even today, it is still a hard thing not to, it's built into our DNA kind of.
Yeah.
Now I still do things like I'll do an elbow bump or something. And, but literally, you know, just with family members, you know, I have two daughters and two granddaughters and, I miss them. Right.
Sure.
We don't go visit our grandkids unless we've gone to get a COVID test first.
Yeah.
I just don't want to be a problem.
Yeah.
But just as human beings touching one another, it's something that we do. Yeah. And not being able to do that is very difficult. And not being able to be around each other, like in City Hall, for example, a lot of legislation kind of gets worked out in the hallway, right? Because you see each other and you say, "Hey, Kevin, I saw you put in this legislation, and I'm just a little curious. What the hell are you thinking?" Right?
Yeah.
And then you have that conversation. You go, "Oh, okay, I got it. I see what you're trying to do now." Yeah. But we don't have that ability now. And because we have these virtual committee meetings and things like that, a lot of times it's has slowed down the process of legislation. Yeah. Because we're not around each other to be able to have those type of conversations.
Of course.
And so it is, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
And it can leave you feeling, I've noticed our suicides in our city have increased. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because people feel isolated.
Yeah.
They maybe have lost their job they've had for 30 years.
Yes.
And they're isolated and they can't be near their families.
Yeah.
It leads to depression.
Yeah.
And so I'm really concerned about that.
Yeah. My daughter's a therapist and she can attest to that. She's working virtually from dawn till dark.
Yeah.
Such a need for that. May I ask you something? We talked about the lack of physical touch. Was your wife's family able to be with her uncle when he died?
No. No.
So sad.
Not. Yeah. And the viewing, you know, is normally when I go to like a viewing for a person's passed away, I always tell people it's like a high school reunion, right?
Yes, of course.
And everybody's packed in there and we're, you know, even though it's a sad time, we cry together, laugh together and do all that.
It's a part of the grief process.
Yeah. And we weren't able to do that. So we only were allowing, you know, four people in there with the family at a time and they go out and more come in. It was just very odd. And leaves you feeling less like you've completed the grieving process. So yes. It extends much further because, you know, we've done some Zoom calls with family members to talk through things and think, but it's not the same. You don't get the hug. No. And that is a part of the grieving process. And so, you know, with the funerals that I have been associated with because of COVID, they've all been the same way.
Yeah.
And it's been very difficult.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, my last question is, once the virus is maybe past its acute phase and we have a vaccine, say, for example, what do you think the new normal will be like?
You know, I think the new normal, I think when I was interesting, I was talking to a developer and he has a lot of buildings downtown. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Do you really think that we're going to continue with this homework thing?" And he says, "No, productivity is, you know, going down. I think people really want their people to be in an office where they can really have a team environment because you don't really make relationships on a screen. And in order to have a real productive team, there has to be some level of a relationship.
I don't know. It looks like Manhattan is clearing out.
Oh, yeah. And so, but what he did say is that he thought that in 3-4 years, maybe, that it would come back, but it would come back differently because, you know, the theme had been these open office environments with these low walls or just a desk. But now because of viruses and health, people are thinking, you know, we're going to have, you know, go back to walls and individual offices just for the fact of protecting one another.
Which actually gives to the, you know, truth of the fact that this is one virus, others may come.
Absolutely. And it has people thinking about the what ifs. What if there's another virus that comes 3 years from now? How are we going to do that? And so even the designing of buildings and the ventilation systems of buildings, I think will be, I think people will really think about this as they're doing things for the future.
Yes.
Because just because we had this experience doesn't mean it won't happen again.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, we weren't around in 1917 and 1918 when the Spanish flu was here. But ironically, this house, I live in Louisville, so I'm in my house right now.
Yeah.
And my house, my neighbor's house, the house to my left, and the house catty corner all belonged to one family. And that was the president of the American Standard Company.
Oh, wow.
He lived in the catty corner house. He built the house next door for his son. And he built these two twin houses for his two daughters.
Yeah.
The daughter that lived in my house died from the Spanish flu.
Oh, my Lord. How ironic is that?
Yeah. And so this house was built like in 1889 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And so it's ironic that in 1917, 1918, people experienced what they experienced. And so now, sometimes early on when we were talking about this, people ask me, I would say, hey, you know, we are experiencing this because people in our lifetimes have not experienced it before.
Yes.
You know, the people back from 1917 and 1918, they experienced it, and they could tell you different things about it, but we didn't experience it. And, you know, a lot of us are not much on reading history books. So a lot of us are making this up as we go along.
Yeah.
Because the things that were available then may not be available now, and the things that are available now weren't available then.
You know, and what, so, though, David, that's why a video like this is so important.
Absolutely. I totally agree. So I'm very appreciative for you doing this.
Is there anything else you'd like to put on the tape?
I think I've said everything. You know, yeah. It's just been
eloquently, I might add.
Well, thank you. It's been an experience, and I keep telling people 2020 has been the year of so much unexpectedness. If you told me that we're going to have a pandemic, and we were going to have civil unrest, and we were going to have a president that apparently is off the rails, all in the same time period. And then we'd have an election process that was so heavily affected by COVID-19 that we're not putting people in booths, and that I can't go to doors knocking and talking to folks like I'm used to during campaign season. I would have said, you're nuts.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen all at
the same
time.
Can't make this stuff up.
Right. How do you make that up? And so here we are, and we're living it, breathing it, and trying to survive it. And we will, and we will get through it. We're just learning as we go and becoming better as we go. But we'll get through this.
Well, it's been a wonderful interview, and I may want to revisit you maybe in 6 months or so to see what more you might want to add. But I really do appreciate your time with me. I know you're a busy man, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, and I appreciate everything you're doing. This is great.
Thank you so much.
Right.
Hey, if you know of anybody else who's willing to talk, and I don't mean just council people, whatever, the family members, I really do need more inroads into the African American community. So anything you and Shalana can come up with, I'd be most appreciative.
We will. I'll have Selena send you the names and email addresses.
Yes.
And we'll go from there.
Plus, Shalana, I want her on. I want to interview her.
She'd be a handful. Good job.
Thank you so much. Have a good rest of the day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.